Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Spice Rock. I am your hostess with the mostest, Faiza Awoh, and I'm here with the most special guest, Oleander. What's going on, man? How's it going?
Hello, I'm having a time, a very fun time. How are you?
I'm just so smooth. just the most relaxed. You're here, so I'm feeling great. Okay. So mostly I just want to go through, this podcast is mainly here for me to talk to a different variety of people to see how they got into the TTRPG space, you know, and like what kind of things and opinions they have about it. So, Oleander, give me the deets. What's your origin story? How did you get into the TTRPG space? And I want to know from the very beginning, the seedlings of an idea for a D&D character till now. What's up?
So I guess if I were to go back to like the beginning of time, me and my brothers, we played pretend a lot, and we all were like exactly 3 years apart each. Ooh. And so as soon as one of us exited an era, another one of us was entering that era. And so there was no break point. Of like, oh, as soon as my older brother gets out of like playing pretend, my younger brother got into it. And since I was the middle brother, I was in pretend mode up until high school, through high school. And we liked professional wrestling and comic books and all the nerd stuff. And we played pretend, but we also put because we watched professional wrestling, we had a lot of fun just like monologuing at each other. It wasn't just like we ran in and started fighting. They were like, oh, but John Cena talks trash for the first 10 minutes before he starts fighting, so we're gonna talk trash.
Yeah, your characters had motive and a backstory.
Yeah.
You were just the coolest kids. Just the top of the popularity food chain, am I right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Everyone definitely loved me in high school. I definitely didn't sit alone at lunch.
Mood.
But yeah, that was sort of like the beginning of playing pretend for me. And then eventually I was like, hey, what if we put rules on this? And so around summer of 2017, I started listening to like a D&D podcast.
Ooh, what podcast?
Not one that I recommend anymore.
Really? Now I want to hear it even more. Because I do want to say, I think the first D&D podcast a person listens to really like shakes.
Yeah. It was The Unexpectables, which was
Ooh, that sounds niche. Oh boy.
It was the cast was one of the members from Team Four Star who were the Dragon Ball Abridged team.
And that's
how I got into it. I didn't grow up liking fantasy. Like, I liked science fiction. I wasn't a big fantasy kid. And
really?
So seeing
you are
someone...
not one of those magic kids? For real?
No, I wasn't.
Oh my
I
God,
wasn't.
Really?
I never liked, like, Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or anything like that. Because I just looked at it and I was like, this is just boring white people walking.
Yeah, when it came to like fantastical media, it was like for me, it was like I like the two Percy Jackson films and all of anime. Mm.
Yeah,
magical ghost shows, my shit.
Yeah,
like the Harry Potter and the Lord of the Rings of the world just didn't do it for me at that age. So you know,
only fantasy things I was into were like Blade, Hellboy, and then like. Again, some anime like Yu Yu Hakusho stuff like that. I guess I was more into like modern fantasy, like, oh, what do monsters look like in New York City? I don't know.
Yeah, I get that.
Same area on the Venn diagram as the Muppets, you know?
totally. My favorite urban fantasy story is for sure the Muppets. Definitely.
I want to see Hellboy, but everyone is a Muppet, but Hellboy. That's all I want.
God. That would be amazing.
And yeah, I was watching that one podcast, and I don't recommend it anymore because, like, as time went on, I was like, y'all are sketchy. And eventually they had like a second show where like there is a white dude playing a black character named Michael Bryant, named after Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and they were a cop. And I was like, I'm out. At the time I'd never seen like a fantasy thing that was just goofball shit, just like Saturday morning cartoon shit. So I got into it, and eventually that fall, I was like, maybe I'll play Dungeons and Dragons. And I got to college, and someone pointed me in the direction of people that like tabletop games, and I went over there, and it was a bunch of burly white dudes with beards, and one of them in, like, you know, the classic cargo pants with the Legend of Zelda shirt. And I walk over there and I go, I think I like Dungeons and Dragons. And they go, ugh, Dungeons and Dragons. Why don't you play a real game like Pathfinder? And I'm like, okay, out. And I went
to Tumblr. Fucking poser. Fucking movie. Get out of here, kid.
And so I went to Tumblr instead.
Oh, boy. You know, as you do.
Yeah. As I had taken a break from Tumblr for like a year, and I was like, okay, time to go back in.
Who came crawling back, as they, as all the rejects do, finding themselves on Tumblr's mighty pages.
It's like that one sound bite of Thanos going, "It all brought you back to me."
Yep.
And I went on Tumblr, and going through like social media is easier to find a group for someone who's not white, who doesn't have friends already, because you're going on like Roll20, and where it's just like a forum where they just put a blurb about themselves, and I'm like, what, how? That's not enough information. But on Tumblr, you click on their account and you can see their whole history.
You can just stalk them, just looking for any red flags. Super hula, yeah. I'm gonna leave. Okay. But yeah.
And that's how I found my first D&D group, who I still play with today.
Wait, how many years have you been playing together?
We're going on our fifth year, and I actually play with them tonight.
That is so cute. Tell them I say hi. But that's really cute. Oh my good. Okay, cool. That is amazing. I want to know how you went from an average D&D player into making TTRPG entertainment, into making content. What was the pipeline? What was the journey that was like, I have opinions and I want to share them? What was that like?
So I want to say late 2019, I was like, damn, this is fun. And I want to play other games, and I want to, excuse me, I had a soda.
hey, dude, you know what? It's a natural body thing. Get out of it. Actually, I'm going to cancel the interview. Let me just end this fucking Skype right now. Disgusting. No, please continue.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. I just suddenly have a Cockney accent for the rest of this. For the rest of this fucking. All right, yeah. Disgusted. Gary, I'm gonna stop. I'm British. Now.
But yeah, it was like late 2019. I was like, oh, this is fun, and I want to play more games, not just Dungeons and Dragons. Right. And I want to do this. I want to do that. And then I decided, you know what? I'm gonna get back on Twitter. And I got back on Twitter, and I just started following random tabletop RPG people. Then the George Floyd protests happened. And then everyone was like, We should start interrogating the racism that's in everything. Mm-hmm. And then the Great Orc Discourse of 2020 happened.
And it descended on every social media platform.
Yeah.
Like a giant fog. Oh, boy.
And so I was sitting there waging war on Twitter, where Abria Iyengar followed me. I didn't post
she
content.
She follows you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I didn't post content yet. I was just some random college student tweeting.
It was a sign. It was a sign from the god.
I was
that
blessed.
Is Abria Iyengar.
She, third eye opened. It was like, third eye opened to be a creator.
Like, it's giving very it. Much Lion King when they do the forehead thing. That follow was equivalent to being like, you will make content.
And
you had a blessing. You had to.
It was a time with the protests, with even like Twitter and Tumblr being like just where I'm waging war on people on all platforms. Mm-hmm. I eventually like burnt out and I was like, I just want to have fun. And so I got on TikTok and I'm like, I'm just going to post about nerd shit here. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about anything but nerd shit. I just want to have fun. Eventually I fell into the niche of Dungeons and Dragons TikTok, where people seemed to like me, but also seemed to not like me.
Oh, boy.
Because I could post like, hey, you know, you can have your cart pulled by dogs, and people would come in droves to tell me that's against the rules. And I'm like, it's on the page right there. I can show you. And people were so upset with me all the time for any little discrepancy.
Nerds do love both. Nerds love being right and also correcting black people. So
yeah, that's...
They'll find any reason to be like, I know it's in the player handbook, but actually, Gary Gygax himself told me you can't have dogs running carriages.
And then the Great Orc Discourse of TikTok came, the round one of it, where I watched all, like, I was like, oh, I want to, like, get involved with the community, and I'd found so many cool other... people of color who were TikTok creators in the D&D space, and they were all so cool. And then we all got burnt out during that argument.
I think at that time I was just like a baby TikTok creator. So I was like, oh, let me make my account. And then I just saw all of it and I was like, damn. Like, what level of hate did you think you got during that time? Like, if you had to give me a percentage of, like, people who support versus people who are against, what?
I don't think I got nearly as much hate as other people that I followed did. I think it was... Because I rarely spoke. I was someone that would, like, chime in and be like, hey, here's Gary Gygax quoting a white supremacist. Bye. And that would piss people off, but I didn't talk too much because I was like, there's a bunch of other people who are much cooler than me who are saying this much better than I could say. So I'll be there to support them. And then I occasionally throw in like shit that I dug out because I'm a weirdo who's like, I would dig through Gary Gygax's 2006 forum from June, a year before he died, to find the quote.
Damn.
About
and that would be cool investigative journalism. <It's important.
laughs> and it was, but it was like a... it was like I literally put Gary Gygax's quote with the source that it came from on the screen, and someone was like, that's fake though. And I'm like, it's his account.
Yeah, it's, you know what it is? Because people will do literally anything in their power to be like, I like this thing, but it was made by a shitty person, therefore I'm going to cover it up. I'm just going to ignore it. And, okay, here's a problem I personally have when talking about these kind of issues. I'm not the most eloquent person, so it's very hard for me to explain why something makes me uncomfortable. If I have to bring up an example, it's like, I don't know if you saw, I made this whole thread of just like, hey, white people playing people POC characters, that makes me uncomfortable. And then I ended up like privating all those videos because I just got so many freaking comments about it, and like I couldn't describe, like it made me just so like deeply uncomfortable, and I couldn't explain why, because I had like thousands of comments being like, well, actually, I play a Black Ranger, and like I play her like really respectfully, and then I don't know how, somehow I got called ableist. I don't know. It was a wild time. It was a wild time.
Yeah, that era of TikTok was also abysmal. So many people I saw were just having a bad time.
In the trenches, being a Black person with a hobby, it is tough.
We were just like, hey, can the descendants of people that ate us not try to wear our skin for 4 hours a week?
I got kind of embarrassed. I got a little bit embarrassed afterwards because I had such trouble expressing it. And then immediately, a couple hours after, I got tagged in this video of like a white psychologist who explained it fucking perfectly. I don't remember his name. I will plug it in the comments in the description when I find him. It was like, and his point was like, and he was white too. He was, and I think maybe that's the reason why some people listen to him, but whatever. Hey, it happens. And his whole point was that like people of color getting upset at white people playing people of color in a game is understandable because you're putting on like a part of that identity that they cannot turn off no matter what, and you're making it like an aesthetic. You're making it just like a cool, quirky part of your character when it carries such like weight and gravitas to like the lives of like millions of people every day. Like it's a thing people get killed over. So the fact like that some people have the goal to be like, you know, for some spice, for some flavor, it's gonna be Black.
I had made a video on that too. Actually, I might have made two videos on that. And because that's another thing, I refuse to repeat myself on TikTok. Yeah. If I say something once and I'm like, yeah, that covers your question, I'm not answering it again. So
I really wish I had no energy during that time.
Because
I would respond to like the same comment because it was just different people. It seemed like, but why though? Is this okay? No, 60% of those comments in this are just like, well, insert my character that's Black or like Asian or whatever, and I'm white. Is this okay? Like I'm not the judge on what's acceptable in D&D, and I'm sure some of them were well-meaning. I mean, well, it's fine. It's no.
It's not.
Also, because white people tan. White people tan.
Yeah.
You want your character to be like not pasty.
Yeah. Like
yeah, I'm from look a at, tropical
look
island.
Look at Antonio Banderas.
Literally, come on.
Like. Look at anyone from Spain. They tan. They pretty tan down there.
They tan, bro.
Just play a Mediterranean white person. Just
literally
leave us alone.
Like y'all are literally everywhere. Come on.
I remember. So one thing that I did after like the first 6 months of being on TikTok, where so many people would try to find little holes with things that I said and make them into bigger things. Lord. I actually started recording with a teleprompter. There's apps for your phone that you can get.
Oh my God. You're a freaking president.
Yeah, I have a teleprompter app on my phone. And so I would write out the scripts to my videos and then I would read them off while I'm recording. And so, I would never be caught off guard, and then I'd throw all sorts of little things out there to make you not realize I'm reading off a teleprompter. Like a lot of my videos, I wasn't wearing glasses in them because then you would be able to tell.
You'd see in the reflections.
Yeah, or...
No one is catching you slipping. Wow.
Or I was moving the camera enough, or I would make sure to look away from the camera, like memorize the next four lines and look away from the camera so that it looks like I'm looking away to think, or that I'm just rattling off thoughts. But at that point, I've already done 10 takes. I have this memorized. Right. And so when I got to that video... it was the video where I was saying, hey, white people, y'all don't have the range, fucking stop.
Literally.
there were so many comments full of people that irritated me because I didn't say anything that other people hadn't said better already. But I know that if people close their eyes and listen to my voice, they're like, that's a white guy. Yeah. And I'm light skinned and I spoke using a teleprompter. So there are several people going, you spoke so eloquently. And I'm like, hey, yo, you need to fucking stop.
You speak so well. The most fucking patronizing.
And it was so annoying. And the comments were just so many people that were like, you're the actual bigot. And I'm like, yeah, understand this. I don't give a fuck about your freedom of speech. Delete. I don't give a shit. I would tell people to fuck off. I would delete their comments. I'm not here to debate.
That is amazing. I mean, okay, here's the thing. I would love to do that, and a part of me always has wanted to, but, like, I don't know, I think, do you never get scared of, like, the like, angry black man, like, stereotype? Is that, like, because I do hate to say it, but sometimes, like,
yeah,
racial profiling and, like, certain stereotypes do affect how I act. I present online on stuff, I'm very much, like, bubbly, good times, funny, whatever, but, like, I am angry. I
am
pissed. But, like, I don't want anyone seeing that, you know? Like, does that, like, not affect you? Like, how are you, like, just managing it?
It affects me in a way that's really peculiar. Because I grew up with my dad was the type of dad that would get us banned from the Denny's. If I went to 7 different elementary schools, because he routinely is like, if I was being mistreated, if any of my brothers were being mistreated, he would walk into the office and
I love that.
Tear shit up. I grew up very well aware of that whole stereotype, and so it always bothered me to a degree of, like, I can't ever show my emotions or else I'm going to get banned from the Denny's, you know? Yeah. And so when I, but when I went to college, I went to a PWI.
And oh, God.
Not just any PWI. I went to a PWI in Appalachia that no one's heard of.
I'm praying for you.
I had classmates that looked me in the eye and told me their grandparents were members of the KKK, not just members, dragons in the KKK. And so that...
Why do white people, like, love sharing how much their family is racist?
I don't know, but they do. They're like, oh, but I like Beyonce now, so it's fine. And I'm like, there's more black artists than Beyonce. I being in that environment was like, on one hand, it taught me to find the fine line of, like, how much anger will get me killed before where it's like, okay, I found out how to do it. Eventually, I just was like, I'm just gonna move like a supervillain. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be on the surface, light and bubbly. There's very few evidence of me being angry online ever, right? But then you say some stupid shit in my comments, and I'ma drag you out of nowhere, and then I'ma delete it.
Yeah.
Do something about it. What? You don't have the proof. It's been deleted.
You have no proof.
And you've been blocked. What are you going to do? Oh, you're going to try to find me on other social medias? This isn't my legal name, and I don't have my social media posted anywhere. Fuck around and find me. Try it.
Goodness.
I moved like that in college too. It was like one person, I was in a show because I went to college for theater. In a show where it was about we were doing scenes from a play called Pipeline that was about these two factory worker dudes who had grown up together. They were childhood friends. Or at least the scenes that we were performing from it were just about those two.
Right.
And the white one went on to commit a hate crime. And the black one was in the area when it happened, and both of them got arrested. And so my character, he was like, oh, I'm gonna fuck you up if we see each other in jail. And I'm gonna hate you for the rest of my life. They did not go to the same jail in the end, but the actor that was playing the character that was racist was actually a bigot. Like he was, and then the third actor was also a bigot who was dating him. And so I was just in a room surrounded by bigots.
And that's what we call method acting.
Yeah. And
oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry.
I was like, you know what I'm gonna do after this show? Because I like the director. The director didn't do anything wrong other than let them say shit. But after this show ends, I'm ruining your life. and so fast forward 6 months, they're not at the college anymore.
Okay.
I collected evidence and I brought it in. I move like a supervillain. And no one knew the wiser. No one knew it was me.
Nobody needs to know.
They saw me at the school bookstore the day that they were dropping out of the college, and I just like waved at them from the other side of the bookstore. Because
yeah, they didn't know it was me.
So my strategy for avoiding looking like succumbing to the stereotypes of the angry black man has just been, I'm gonna move like Lex Luthor for my whole life.
Yep.
You're not gonna see me pulling the strings, but I'm gonna ruin your fucking life. I'll in quiet.
Cunning is a great character trait to have. Very useful. But yeah, so how did, sorry, we need to get back on topic.
Ugh. Yeah, tabletops.
Tabletop. Yeah. Hey guys, this is also a show about D&D. So how, from that experience, how did that lead to you into like making content?
When I started making content, it was that I need to find a way to escape. And then it led to me wanting community. And then because I'm a very not speak unless spoken to kind of person. Like really? I don't make friends very easily because I don't actively go out and look for people to talk to. So I didn't make a ton of friends on TikTok. Like I've worked with a few people from D&D TikTok and on Twitter, but for the most part, I don't talk to most people. It was like I think you're cool, you think I'm cool, let's work together, and then we go our separate ways. Yeah. And that's how it was for me, and up until, ironically, after I stopped actively posting on TikTok. Where 2021 hit, I was so completely burnt out by April that I was just not posting like more than once a week maybe. And right now I'm still on that. I don't post. I'll go like 2-3 weeks without posting. And that summer, CJ, Scholastic Dragon, who is currently my co-host on Blurred of Mouth.
Whoa, Blurred of Mouth? What's that?
Yeah, it's the podcast where black nerds talk black nerd shit, and we typically pick out a bunch of media, movies, television. We're supposed to be doing a webtoon this
podcast. You're making a webtoon?
No, we're not making one. We're reviewing one. We're reviewing how the black characters are handled in various kinds of media. And it's super fun because we just sit around and it's us shooting the shit for 30 minutes to 45 minutes per episode, just speed running through as many black characters as we can in that time. And sometimes we get sidelined, and sometimes we nail it on the head. But either way, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be just us doing silly shit. But yeah, right. CJ had reached out to me, and this is before Blurred of Mouth had ever been conceived. I was just on Twitter, and CJ reached out to me and was like, "Hey, want to be friends?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And
I love that. That's so cute.
And then they, 2-3 weeks later, hit me up and said, "Hey, friend of mine is doing a Monster of the Week one shot. You interested?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And so I did a one shot of Monster of the Week on the Ephemeral Forest back when that was still a place that was operating. And after the Ephemeral Forest sort of came to an end, all of the people of color from the Ephemeral Forest moved over to a new server.
Migrated. The great POC migrated.
And we all congregated over there. That's where we started Blurred of Mouth. I don't know if you've heard of Monster Fucker Anonymous, but they're in that server.
Hey. Yeah, I think I it's because I interviewed a person who owns a Monster Fucker podcast, and I'm trying to remember if that's them.
It was Cleric 34 and Scary Dog Friend.
There it is! Yeah, I interviewed Scary Dog. Yeah. I knew it sounded familiar. It's them.
Joe and Cleric are fun. I hang out with them pretty much every other night in Discord now. And that's cool. Where I found my community, really. Surprisingly, it was a bunch of people that burnt out of TikTok, not on TikTok. And we play tons of tabletop games. We've been in that group for about 8 months now. And I've played a wider variety of games in the past 8 months than I have in the past 5 years.
Really?
And even with my original D&D group, we still play every Sunday. Both of the GMs in that group, because typically we have two campaigns and they switch out every Sunday so that the GMs have 2 weeks to plan each. And both GMs burnt out at the same time.
Oh, no.
And so I spent the past 4 months GMing Monster of the Week for them. And then they all were like, "Oh my God. Dungeons and Dragons isn't the only game."
Yeah, just suddenly the horizons have been opened. Love it.
Yeah, and it was super fun. And then with Blurred of Mouth, speaking of Monster of the Week, we're gonna do a two to three part mini series of me GMing Monster of the Week as an actual play podcast this year.
To see it. You had it here first. Yeah. Breaking news.
This is an exclusive.
the Spice Rack getting an exclusive content, baby. But yeah, how did you find the moving of like being a player to suddenly being a GM? How was it?
So the first time I GM'd was was 2020 when the pandemic hit. Literally, it was like a GM was like, "I need a break for a bit." No, that wasn't it. It was the GM was like, hey, since the pandemic is hitting, everyone has more free time. And I'm like, hey, Critical Role put out their Frozen Sick Adventure from the Explorer's Guide of Wildemount, and I know all of y'all like Critical Role. I can run that. And then it turned into a campaign. Because we had so much free time and the pandemic wouldn't end. And so I ran that from April 2020 to December 2020. And getting into that was a can of worms. So weird, because when I ran it, I was starting with the Frozen Sick, which only gets you up to level 3, I believe. Right. It ends with you being level 3, and it only took us 3 sessions to complete. And it was
running it.
Yeah, they moved fast. They dodged entire encounters.
Damn.
I was like, damn, y'all were supposed to walk into that store and get jumped. Y'all somehow like worked around and then discovered where the end of the mystery would be and then ran straight there. You clipped through the wall like Bethesda characters in like Goodness. Skyrim. I was like, how the hell?
Oh no.
And then like the big final boss fight where they fight like a white, W-I-G-H-T, not W-H-I-T.
Hey, guys. Yup. Just zero racial tension on this podcast. All right. Cool, cool,
they had an immovable rod because I gave one to them because I was like, oh, they won't. What could happen? They just locked the white in its tomb. Like they stole the cure to the disease that they were trying to cure, and then ran out the tomb and then locked the door with the immovable rod and booked it. And I was like, damn, y'all move fast. And we called their party the Door Dashers because they just walked in and busted down every door that they came through.
Very good. That is very good.
And then it evolved into a campaign. And when I started writing my own stuff for it, it was complicated because I wrote way too much. Because I didn't want to railroad them, so I wrote out 6 different fucking quest lines.
Goodness.
To completion.
Goodness gracious.
And one of those, the quest line they actually went on was at least 35 pages. I haven't checked.
Oh my god.
And they really only needed about 10 of them.
We are polar opposite. For my first campaign, I ran it for like March of 2020, so it's like 2 years. I did not write a single thing down until we were like 30 sessions in.
It's just I wish I could move like that.
I had ideas, possible BBEGs. It's like the beginning was like, here's a random MacGuffin, figure some shit out. I do regret not writing anything down because there's just like so many NPCs, like their names I've forgotten. So it's like, cool, so how's like Tinkle McDingdong doing? And I'm like, oh yeah,
it's always the Tingle McDingdongs.
Shout out to the Tingle McDingdongs.
I remember my players, I was just like, they're like, oh, what's an inn in town? I named off a few different inns, and one of them, I had not said it out loud until that moment. And I was like, oh, it's called the Grizzled Guzzler. And they're like, the Grizzly Guzzler? And I'm like, okay, it does sound like a gay club for bears, but...
the Gizzy Guzzler?
take a guess as to what inn they stayed at.
Oh boy.
It was the Grizzled Guzzler, and they made
the
Grizzled
Guzzler, home of the Guzzy Gladiator.
but I'm also a chaotic GM, and so I played along with it. I was like, yeah, you walk outside, someone's taken down the LED and turned it to an LY on the side.
Oh, no.
It was, I am simultaneously the most lenient DM, but also the one that overplans for everything.
Right.
Because I had a playlist for that. I make a lot of playlists when I play, because I like to curate the mood so much. And so the town had a playlist, both for day and for night, while they were outside. And then individual buildings that they walked into also had individual playlists. My Spotify Wrapped was a mess.
So, like, were they just instrumentals? Like,
they were all instrumental.
Okay.
It was fun, but also, and over prepping helped me, because I knew where every NPC in town was at any given moment, because I planned way too fucking much. they only went into four buildings. I planned a whole city.
Just a whole city. It was like, at 2 p.m., Mr. McDingle is going to walk across the street, and they might walk into the place if they go down the street. Just like, so much. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Just going into your mind palace. Just fucking...
The reason why I struggled with planning so much is because when you GM for the first time, there's no guide for you.
There isn't.
The best you could do to try to figure out what GM notes are supposed to look like is to find a module or some other GM's notes and then plagiarize them.
Here's the thing, right? For my first session, I was gonna do a module. It was something to do with, like, a railroad or whatever it was called, like that. And then I was, like, reading it, and I'm like, A, I don't understand how I'm supposed to do that. I don't get it. But B, this is maybe the most boring thing I've ever... Mm. It was, like, 6 pages long. I read, like, the first 2 pages, and I was like, no, I'm gonna just figure it out on my own. Yeah, it's a really wild experience playing a D&D campaign without knowing any official D&D lore. It's cool, let me just look up a random stat block. Sweet.
The official lore is nonsense, it's fine.
Yeah, the horror I had joining D&D TikTok and figuring shit out. Like, oh.
Yeah. Like, for the most part, during that time, we also began thinking about, because both my GMs, they were like, oh, one of us are going to finish our campaign eventually. You want to do your own? And so I've been sitting here making an entire campaign setting. I've planned 3 continents. I have fully illustrated maps already. I know the names of rulers of continents of kingdoms they'll never see, that campaign's not happening until probably the end of this year. I've been sitting here ruminating on for 3 years,
just thinking about marinating.
Yeah, I have a document full of lore. That,
how long is it?
The one continent that they're actually on, the basic lore is like 30 pages. And it's like, yeah, you only need to actually read those 2 pages right there to understand what's going on. But like, there's 40 pages of stuff if you want to. And then there's another document full of all of my lore on the gods, because I created my own homebrew
pantheon.
And so that's another 40-page document. Because I was just like, oh, here's their domain.
So you're just like deep in the paint of like homebrew, just up in that.
I basically
got the trenches.
Got an 80-book supplement at this point, an 80-page supplement at this point.
So wait, do you think, like, when you finish your campaign, you're just gonna be like, here's everything you missed, just sending the book to your players, be like, here's like 800 pages of lore you didn't find out, enjoy.
Yeah. I think for me, when I GM'd Monster of the Week, and Monster of the Week is a game that actually walks you through the beat by beat of building a session. And I was like, oh, I've been over planning. And that changed my life. So
never the same.
Now I have all of this lore that basically is just my motivation on like inspiration on how to do things. But now it's going to be very, very simple, quick. Like, I know how much I personally need to plan now. It's like the pathway of oh yeah, I planned 6 whole quest lines. You only needed to go on one of them, but I planned 6.
I really hope you recycle content.
I do recycle content.
I made 6 quests, but I'm gonna make you guys do these later in the future, yeah. In a different town and whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I recycle my ideas.
Good.
But I love world building at this point. Even for the Monster of the Week game I'm about to do for Blurred of Mouth, I built a fictional city because I did not want to have to be cursed with New Yorkers tweeting at me going, you pronounced the name of this street wrong.
It's wrong!
And so I'm like, I'll make my own city, and no one will be able to tell me I'm mispronouncing the street names.
It's just like Boo York City, you know, just totally different. It's totally different, guys.
Yeah, this is
original city. This is,
this is New Chicago, DC.
Just so original, so fresh. So, oh wait, so that's really interesting. So like your bread and butter when it comes to DMing is like world building. That's like your main like excited thing. Because here's the thing, as a DM, he's made 2 separate worlds. Straight up, shit. And I think it sucks. I think it's fun to a certain extent, but when it comes to like the thing I'm excited to do, it's mostly like NPC character roleplay work. You know what I mean? Because here's the thing, the phaser formula for making a campaign, pretty easy, is just, you make a BBEG, you get everyone's backstories, and then you just weave it together into being like,
yeah,
cool. Yeah, just like the guy who murdered your parents, turns out that's the uncle of the other guy, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
just,
a...
all my campaigns I run, basically telenovelas. Just the most buck wild,
But I love those. I love those kinds of campaigns.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, what a coincidence we're together. And what a coincidence everything all of my friends happened to link up. And it's like, yeah, I get it. I understand this is a crazy amount of coincidence story-wise. I think it's fun. I think it's
yeah.
But, you know, that's just for
when it comes to, like, it always depends on, like, what kind of story you plan on running. I grew up on stuff like Star Wars, which at the time I didn't realize was actually just fantasy in space.
You never know. Hey.
I didn't like fantasy, but I liked fantasy in space. I liked space operas and stuff like that.
Fantasy is so silly. I'm gonna go, you know, fuck magic. I'm gonna go learn the Force.
Yeah. Fuck it. That's exactly what it was.
Which is just and like spacey telepathy or whatever.
It clicked for me when I was like a teenager and I'm just sitting there and they're doing the Clone Wars. And they go to this planet called Dathomir, and they're like, oh, you know, not everyone uses the Force the same. And these people, the Night Sisters, they harness the power of the Force to use magic. And I'm like, you just straight up say magic?
They dropped it on you when you was too deep to leave. There is magic in this world.
And then I grew to love fantasy as time went on. But basically, like, every single, like, type of story takes a different kind of preparation. And If you're going for like for Monster of the Week, it was more of like that telenovela style that you mentioned, where I was like, I'm gonna plan the mystery that y'all have to go on, and then I'm gonna find ways to use your backstory against you, and that's all. Yeah. It was quick and dirty because I only had a week to plan each session. And it was incredibly fun because on that one I was like, yo, I'm a try to make this feel as much like you're on your own CW show as I can.
That is so accurate. That is so accurate. Just the stupidest shit.
Yeah.
I will say this now though, the Riverdale TV show as a D&D campaign would rule. It would be
that would rule.
I never watched it, but like watching it from like the background, like just seeing other people react to it, it's like, all right, cool. And it's based on Archie comics. Just something about high school. Oh, there's a serial killer. Oh, it's a monster. They have a superpower.
Yeah. A friend just told me they time traveled back in time and had to stop the black girl from saving MLK at a certain point. And I was like, how did we get here?
What is happening? No, actually, okay, there's a funny story about that. Apparently, like, the guy who's running it, he had a play called, like, Archie Goes to New York or something. And then the Archie Comics brand was like, we're shutting this shit down. Like, this isn't correct. Yada, yada, yada. So everyone thinks it's, like, his giant revenge plot against Archie Comics.
the longest con of all time.
Just like this young New York theater kid being like, you will rue the day you shut down my mini production of an Archie.
And the audience for Riverdale is too dedicated. The ratings won't go down, so they just have to keep greenlighting it.
Literally. I honestly respect it. I hope he's having a great day. He deserves it. Just working up a company just to tank it. Oh, gotta respect it. God. Some people really be praying on your downfall, and some people do it themselves. Okay. All right. But yeah, if we wrapped up on that, would you be interested in reading some D&D Am I the Asshole Reddit posts? Is that something you'd be interested in? Cool. I would not like to update my phone. Apple, piss off. Remind me they are. Cool. Okay. So I think it's cool if I read one, and then I send you one over Discord, and then you read it, and then talk, walkity walk. Cool?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Great. Okay. Not now. Goodness. Okay. Sorry. Big pop-ups. This was posted by Katep 2000 1 month ago. Am I the asshole for telling someone a D&D campaign is full when it technically wasn't? So I, 21 female, play a lot of tabletop RPGs, and I'm in a I get tongue-tied so easily. Okay, and I'm in a gaming group at my college. I really love playing, and tabletop games are basically responsible for helping me overcome my childhood social anxiety. Aw, sweet. Recently, I received a pre-written Dungeons & Dragons adventure as a gift from a relative. I've decided to play it with some people from my gaming group. I sent out a message in the group Discord like, hey, I just got this adventure and I'm willing to be the dungeon master for this game. Anyone interested in playing with me? I got 5 interested friends and we started planning. On Saturday, Ben, 19 male, another member of the gaming group, approached me and said, I heard you are running a game. Do you have any spots left? I have played with Ben before. It was not a good experience. Dungeons & Dragons is somewhat luck-based due to the reliance on dice rolls. That means one bad dice roll can cause a plan or encounter to drastically change. That's part of the fun of the game. Problem-solving with the dice aren't cooperating. Whenever there was a bad roll, though, Ben would throw a tantrum, yell and scream about how everything was ruined and all our characters were gonna die. Every time someone called him out on acting like a 4-year-old, he would just say, oh, well, the last time I played, the guy running it would kill you if you rolled badly. I didn't want to go through that again, so I just told him we were full, and he was fine with it. When I got all my players together, one of them, Peter 20 male, brought up that Ben had expressed interest in him and asked if he had talked to me about it. I said he did, and we were already full. The adventure running is meant to be 4 to 6 players, and Peter knew that. He said we could fit Ben in if we really wanted to. I explained the tantrum situation, and while most of the players agreed it was probably better to not have him, Peter is adamant that Ben deserves a chance and says I'm being too hasty. Now Peter is calling him an asshole for telling him no. I'm the asshole for excluding him. Let me just make sure my throat's clear for this. No.
Yeah, no.
No.
You're not the asshole for telling him to. No.
No. Here's the thing. Being the DM comes with a lot of responsibility, you know, because despite the fact everyone is there to have fun, you do have, like, a lot of power in terms of, like, scheduling and, like, you know, all of that. That also comes with the power to who you play with. It all hangs on you. So if you don't want to DM for a certain person,
yeah,
you're fine.
The GM is a player too, you deserve to have fun.
It's not gambling. It's a luck based game.
Yeah,
it just happened to, like,
you can't bring your Call of Duty to D&D.
like a good chunk of all the roles are gonna be pretty bad, and you can't be first when it happens. You know, that's what makes the fun game, the game fun, the stakes. Mm. The stakes are what make it fun.
And I knew a guy that was like that. You know when I said dude in the Zelda shirt with the cargo pants?
Yeah.
There was a point where I was sitting in the cafeteria at that college, and that dude had not shown up to the lunchroom in, like, what felt like days. And then one of the dudes that came by, that was at his table, like, walked by me, and he was like, hey, just so you know, Chad got so angry after failing a role.
Of course, a Chad.
That he had an anger stroke. And I was like,
that's a
is
thing
that possible?
You can
get so angry you can have a stroke? What? Because he failed a role?
I shouldn't be laughing. A guy went to the hospital for that.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't be laughing. But, like, also, what?
That's so random. What the fuck? I want to think about how, like, just, like, can I make a performance check? Yeah, sure, Chad, go. Nat one, you fail. Also,
like, apparently he was throwing the biggest temper tantrum, and then things just went downhill.
Oh boy.
And that's so it was such a shock, and I'm just like, I would hate to see how angry he was in that room, I'll be honest.
I you won't like me when I'm angry. No, I'm so whoa. Damn.
I didn't know that was possible.
Pushing medical limits. All right.
He was fine though. Like he came back like the next week. He walked with a cane for a bit, but he was fine.
Imagine having to explain the injury. And just like, "Oh, you had a stroke. What happened?"
Well, Dungeons and Dragons. Well, not even Dungeons and Dragons. Pathfinder.
Yeah,
because he yelled at me for Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh boy.
That was.
Yeah. Same conclusion. Not the asshole. You've control over it. Don't worry. Would you like to read the next one?
All right.
I sent it to the Discord. Boom.
I see it.
Glistening splendidly.
Am I the asshole for not organizing a D&D event because I didn't get enough responses? So, I play a tabletop game like D&D fairly often with my friends, but recently they've kind of dropped the ball on either showing up late or not answering at all, but still showing up and expecting me to have prepared for them. Tried to set one up for this weekend and got 3 people from the usual group answer. 1 confirmed a time with me and the other 2 wouldn't say if they were free or not. I tried asking again an hour beforehand, but I still got no answer. These take me a long time to set up, and I feel like if they don't appreciate that, then I shouldn't bother doing this. So I decided not to do anything or show up on our group call to play because the majority of the group couldn't be bothered to let me know if they were going to be there. They did show up and have said I'm overreacting and that I should have assumed they were coming. I feel like I'm not in the wrong, and to be honest, I don't even want to set up a game in the future. You're not an asshole.
You're not an asshole. You're just a bunt out DM that doesn't feel appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this one specifically because I think this is just such like a prevalent issue in the DM community. Hey gang. The DM is a person with feelings, with their own time. So please respect the time they're using to play that game with you. I don't know. It's just unfair. I don't like how sometimes DMs are treated. Because at the end of the day, before they are a DM, they are your friend, I hope. And you should respect the time they are using to put on this game for you. But yeah, because his name, I think every DM at least once has been like, hey, the session five, whatever, what's the time everyone can do? And then you just kind of get like Ed in the group chat or something. Which sucks. And I understand players, sometimes you're just not bothered to like respond or whatever, but like, come on.
Yeah. I've been in that position with the group that I've played in the longest. There is a situation where we tried to, it was 2021 and we had been done with that first campaign I ran for months. And then like halfway through 2021, they were like, y'all wanna do it again? You wanna bring those characters back? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll GM that. And I only had one session out of the six sessions I tried to run that had the whole crew there. And most times I got no warning.
That's happened to me a couple times.
I prepped a lot because I did a lot of work to try to make sure I tied each and every one of them into the story in a way. And then to have none of them show up, it made me feel some type of way.
That's totally that's normal. Because you're putting in so much time in something for other people's entertainment.
Yeah.
And it really sucks when you're doing like a shared hobby and it feels like you care more than the other people. Yeah. I think that's my main issue with it. Because it's like, like, why am I even here if like you guys don't think it, like, I get it, it's like a game, but it should be like at least like kind of important, I think. It should mean something to you.
I'm making battle maps. I'm crafting a story. All you have to do is show up and have your character at the right level. That's really the only work you've got to do. Like, in this case, you've already built the characters. You don't even have to write a backstory. In the end, we just acknowledged that, maybe trying to run another campaign on a Tuesday was not the best move for this group. And everything was fine after that when we went back to just playing on our designated Sundays where everyone knew we had time. But it did make me feel some type of way in the moment where I was like, how much I planned for you all.
Yeah. It's also, plus, I think it's a thing where it's like, there's nothing wrong with asking to reschedule. There is nothing wrong. It's the ghosting with no warning that kills me. It's like 2 hours past the time you were supposed to start playing, and then you get the text of like, hey, sorry, can't do it. And then it bumps me out. It's a bummer. Anyway, but yeah, I would say not the asshole. It's like a situation to be in. So sorry, OP. I have another one. It is posted by Ozzy Man Diaz 31, and it's posted 23 days ago, so it's not that far, posted in the past. Okay, am I the asshole for complaining a lot on a D&D game? See, I'm a competitive person, I'll admit it, and I don't like it when things go wrong, but I like to complain in these situations. This is a way to de-stress. I also like to make fun of other characters as they make fun of me too. But lately, we've been arguing because apparently one or more players at our table don't like the fact that I complain during the game. Complain about bad dice or that we're losing a lot in an unbalanced encounter, in my opinion. The thing is, my complaints are mostly about de-stressing, so much that I keep playing happily, chatting, and playing normally afterwards. I believe I'm not wrong about this because it's part of my personalities, part of my personality, and I've never demanded that anyone at the table change to suit me and my gaming needs. Another factor is that most of the table has been friends with the GM for a long time and has a similar personality. Well, I'm different in this regard, both because I'm a new player in this dynamic and because I have a different way of dealing with stress. The GM told me that sometimes in my frustration, I am rude to others, which is true, but nothing I say is personal against any of them, and I don't mean to be rude. They understand this says rude, but it's just rant, as they also make fun of my character and me, calling me useless or cowardly, in this case, my character, which also annoys me. But he disregards the saying I'm just a joke, and that because I don't like being the butt of the joke, it just makes it funnier for them to make fun of me, calling me a crying baby. But when I make fun of them, then I'm rude. I spoke to the GM who, despite understanding his points, I disagree with. Me being the asshole of the situation, as there are things in the personality of the people at our table that also stress me out. That's just not why I speak badly about them. And the GM, I'm going to speed this up because this is a lot. The GM told me that despite being my way of de-stressing, it ends up stressing other players, but there are several things that other players do that stress me out. But I don't complain about their attitudes, and I think it's unfair that I'm the only asshole for de-stressing, while others can talk and do whatever they want. I offered a compromise and said that when it wasn't my turn, I would mute me so as to not disturb others. I might be the asshole because I'm making people stress too. So I'm the asshole for complaining as a way of venting. Whew, that was a word salad. I ended up cutting out two paragraphs of that, but it was just like, it's my personality, so it's not important.
That's a complicated one. I feel like on one hand, it sounds like a case of y'all ain't got chemistry. Like if it's a situation where all your other players are mocking you in a way that makes you feel bad, and the GM just allows it, you're not an asshole for making fun of them back, but also. I'm gonna need to see some quotes because you're also saying that you go like you're getting upset and angry and lashing out at other players in ways that you even agree is kind of rude and it's just your way of de-stressing, and I'm like, that doesn't make you sound like a good person
also,
either.
Plus, like. What is making you so stressed at this table? It's a like I get it. Certain encounters can be like, you know, frustrating or it's hard or it's like you're genuinely worried for your character and stuff. But like,
yeah.
This is like an excuse to be.
I'm in the DM camp of there's no such thing as a balanced encounter.
That is totally. You know, here's the thing, right? This is maybe a bad barometer, but I know it's a good encounter when at least 1 to 2 players go unconscious. That is my plan. That is balanced. In my brain, as long as 1 to 2 of you guys pass out within the first 2 to 3 rounds, it's a good one.
On one hand, you don't want to push the players too hard, but also... I've been in a game as a player where I played for like 3 years and only went down twice.
What?
As a wizard.
What? Let me tell you now, straight up. If I was your DM,
I'd get fucked up every day.
You would die at least every 1 to 2 sessions.
I was at like level 8 with 30 hit points and still fine. And I'm like, okay, I know I'm pretty decent at distancing myself. But I'm not that good. Come on. I know it's hard to make an encounter, but you do gotta put the fear of the gods in the players sometimes.
Also, here's the thing, right? I know I sound crazy, but here's the thing. All these groups, they have healers. So if someone goes down, they're fine. Unless I go unless I'm a full villain and it's like, cool, you're down, you're prone, they have advantage. Unless I go full villain, like 90% of the time, it's like you go unconscious. Okay, cool. They're gonna go focus on the other player now, not like, you know. I mean, well, I think they're gonna be, if you're a cleric, you could.
You're better than me in that regard. Really? I will counterspell your revivify.
That is fucked up. That is a line. There's a line, good sir.
I will let you go, and then I cast revivify, and I go. No.
Here's the thing. I've thought about counterspelling healing spells. I've never done it. Not yet.
I feel like when it comes to doing stuff like that, you might as well, because it allows the people that have stuff for that situation to use it. Imagine someone tries to cast Revivify on their downed barbarian, right? Like the cleric goes to cast Revivify on the downed barbarian, and then I counterspell it. Then the wizard counterspells the counterspell, so right? That's a cool moment there.
That is, yeah. Yeah, or, you're saying that something cool. Yeah.
And we couldn't have gotten to that moment if I didn't take down the barbarian and counterspell your revivify.
For sure.
Conflict creates fun moments.
Definitely. you know what it is? I don't know, like, some people, like, are really concerned about it being, like, it has to be fair. The world isn't fair. The world is not fair, and your encounters should not be either. Like, all the DMs out there, every once in a while, throw out an encounter, they cannot win.
See if they run.
I think that's a good thing to throw out when they're, like, early levels. So, like, when they're, like, like, maybe level 3, level 4, when they're getting maybe a bit too brave. Cool, there's a Tarrasque. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, running is always a good option.
People forget when I ran my first campaign, I think my players forgot that, because the first time the first adventure we did, they were just steamrolling through it. Then they accepted this quest to go to Shady Creek Run, which in Critical Role's world is a lawless town.
Oh boy.
I don't watch enough Critical Role to know what it's actually like. So I was like, Matt Mercer, if it's not in the book, it doesn't exist. And so I reinterpreted everything. It's like, okay, well, I'm interpreting this sentence as blank, right? And so when I described Shady Creek Run to them, they're like, oh shit, that sounds kind of dangerous. And then on the way to Shady Creek Run, they were attacked by goblins riding ice wolves, frost wolves.
Literally ice-breathing wolves. So sick. And
I took it easy on them and still almost killed one of them. Because technically those wolves would have gotten pack tactics automatically because they have allies riding them.
Yup.
So unless you killed the goblins, you could not have gotten rid of their advantage.
Yeah. The mercy of being a DM is not reading stat blocks correctly and just ignoring certain abilities.
But it should have been harder. But even just that one moment put enough fear in them to go, oh shit. He might try to kill us one day. And so when they got Shady Creek Run, they tried to operate as stealthily as possible because they were like, let us not get into a fight in the middle of this lawless street. When they rolled into the town, the first thing they saw was a public execution. They were like, oh shit.
You put the fear of God into these riots. You patterned them immediately. Do you think your big bad adventure is cool? Fight these ice wolves with their fucking insanity.
And they were 4 level 3 players. That was not a balanced encounter. They took out as many of them as they could and then got on their horses and ran away. It reminded them that I will attempt to kill them. You don't have an immovable rod and a door to hide the enemies behind anymore. And it was, but yeah, you sometimes gotta shake them up so that they realize, oh, just because you unlocked the ability to shoot fireballs out your finger doesn't mean there's not bigger fish.
Literally, you know? always.
There's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish. Oh god, that is great. I have sent you another one, if that's cool.
All right.
Woo!
Am I the asshole? Oh wait, this one is from Goku King 922.
right.
am I the asshole for not giving them a retcon? So my group is going through one of the big hunts in Heliana's Guide to Monster Hunting. Without giving too much away, in one of the hunts, all the enemies have necrotic damage. They were fighting their way through the mini-boss down to the final two enemies when the bard says, "We have no options left. I'm going to cast Inflict Wounds on this one," referring to the biggest and strongest one. I asked if he was sure he wanted to do it. He said yes, and then his party member spoke up. The two discussed other options, all of which sounded good, but the bard kept backtracking to Inflict Wounds. He kept on going on about how it was the only way to win the fight. One last time I asked, "Are you absolutely sure?" He said yes, and even upcasted it to third level despite my numerous attempts to sway him. Goodness. I had him roll for everything and then showed them that the stat block showed an immunity to necrotic damage. Immediately the player starts asking, almost begging me for a retcon, saying he was going to use one of the other spells they were talking about. I told him no because he went through with the spell anyways, despite my multiple attempts to sway him from there. He blamed me and asked, he blamed me and how I wasn't clear enough, right? Because asking you if you were certain you wanted to do that on multiple different occasions wasn't a clear indicator that this was a bad idea. They later won the fight through a nice combination of teamwork and good luck, but am I an asshole?
I'm gonna say no, but I feel bad for the bard and his luck.
I feel bad for the bard, but I don't think he's an asshole.
I empathize. I don't think you're not an asshole. I don't think anyone in this situation is an asshole. Maybe the bard for pushing it a bit too much, whatever. The bard wanted a good main character moment, and that hubris led to them getting smacked.
I will say, as a bard, I played a bard for I've played a bard for so long, and they give you so little things to use in a fight. Like, most of it is illusion spells and thunder spells, and if you're in an environment where thunder's not really great, like a cave, for example, where you don't want to drop a stalagmite on your head, or in a building where you don't want to break all the glass in the building, you ain't got much. and so I can understand why the bard was like, "I'ma use Inflict Wounds." But also, look, if I had my GM say, "Are you sure you want to do that to me like six times?" I think I'd be like, "Okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down here."
It's really sad because some people can't pick up tone indicators, and I get that. But like,
yeah.
It's just a tragic series of events.
Feel like maybe this is just me being an actor.
Of course, go ahead, please.
A thespian, if you would. but if I were in that situation, I'd just go, "Oh shit, I knew, the player knew, but my character didn't know." And that's why he used Inflict Wounds. And I would use that as motivation for my next attack, you know?
Definitely.
Take the L.
Yes, yeah, character building moments, guys. It's okay to fail. It's okay to fail. And if anything, failure should be encouraged because, you know, at least D&D games are so boring if everything is going good for you.
I've had boss fights where we walked in to throw hands with the boss and the GM was like, "All right, it's time to go," and then we just absolutely mopped the floor with the boss and the GM was like, "Oh shit."
That is why your bosses should have second stages. I will say this every day. Second stages, and if your players like are having a hard time with the first stage, you don't use the second one. But oh my god, you down them. if they're going but too quickly, cool. It's like, cool, you see their corpse fall to the ground, and suddenly an egg appears, and it cracks out of the dying body. Part two, baby. 200 hit points. Let's go. Like, yeah.
I recently ran a one-shot for a group of players, and I said, hey, be prepared for your characters to die. Because
don't get too attached.
This is the biggest encounter I've ever designed, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So prepare to die. And they're like, okay, yeah, whatever. And they showed up, and they walk into this cave, and it's like, okay, there's like 10 dudes and a big boss over there. Sounds simple enough. I don't know why you made such a big deal out of it. And they kill this guy, kill that guy, kill that guy. Then it's the big boss's turn, and he blows a whistle, and a hydra comes out of the fucking shit in the middle. There's like a hole with water in the middle of the cave.
Yes.
And they're like, okay, maybe we were shit talking too much. And it's like, sometimes you don't even need a second stage. You just need to add an entirely second boss.
Just a second. The Hydra comes and they're just like, we were kidding. We were joking. It's fine.
And they still did great in that fight too. Like it was really a thrilling fight. Because they eventually found out that a Hydra could not regrow heads if it was affected by fire damage in the last round. And so eventually they were just throwing fireballs everywhere. And then I was like, I anticipated that. And I gave the boss a big ability that was like, yeah, if he takes enough fire damage, because he's always going to be next to the fucking Hydra, he can launch that shit back. And so I made that like his last ditch effort move, and they took like 87 fucking damage. And
oh, God.
They barely survived, but they survived. And they're like, oh, that was so cool. And one of them even disintegrated the Hydra. It was dope. They were high enough level to have the disintegrate spell.
Love it. Love it.
And
that's such a cool spell.
It's so fun to give your players a challenge that you're not sure if they're able to win, and seeing them win.
Yeah. Here's the thing, right? I think DMs who are like pussyfoot around, like, oh, it has to be like balance. I hope and I guarantee 90% of the time your players are more competent than you think. I swear.
Yeah.
Like, if it's balance, that really means it's easy. And if it's hard, that means it's medium. And if if you personally could, like, I don't know how they're gonna do this, they'll probably find a way. Because you don't know the ins and outs of their characters. They are staring at that character sheet for how many hours a week, thinking about, oh, I'm going to get two weapon fighting, and oh, this weapon adds a plus two to, you know? Like they're optimizing, and you're not looking at how they are optimizing, so they will crush you without noticing.
That's like, I made, so my wizard character, he's multi-classed into warlock.
Oh, yes!
Wizard Warlock is a dangerous combo, because that means they have the ability to hex people and magic missile.
Oh no.
Which,
oh no.
And he was a Hexblade Warlock too, which means he could hex you twice and then magic missile you. He was doing a minimum of like 20 damage with like a third level magic missile. It was terrifying.
Goodness, I'm saving that character build for later. Cool.
And so it's like, if you put a thread in front of me where I know they're gonna be alive for long enough for me to use two bonus actions to put two hexes on them, right? Once we get to that third round,
you're done.
Magic missile city. Let's go.
City. Oh my God. Yeah.
You better kill me quick.
That's why, see, DM, with early on this character, that's why you knock him out in the first couple rounds and you wait for someone to revive him.
Yeah.
Then you don't get Missile City and your BBEG lives for a bit longer. Also, pro tip, villains you want to come back that your players defeat, Make sure they have a teleport spell at some point. Make sure they have a teleport spell. Like,
absolutely. I'm pretty
sure, like, the first villain, like, they weren't, like, the main baddie, but they were, like, one of the generals of, like, Lolth's army or whatever, which happened to be a character's ex. Anyway. Telenovela, baby.
Drama. No,
the drama. Yeah. It's, like, they, like, she was wiping them out. They were, I think they were, like, level 3-ish that were, like, 5 of them, and she was, like, a level 9 bard warlock mix. She was just wiping the floor with them. Eventually, they got her down to, like, I would say she was down to, like, her last, like, 5 hit points. And she's just like, I'm fucking Audi 5000, bye. And she just misty steps. And then everyone's like, ah, shit, I forgot. That's probably a thing they could do. Just a good exit strategy is very important, no matter what, if you want people to come back. But yeah, this feels like a great place to end. thank you so much for being on here. I really appreciate it so much. Oleander, what do you have to plug? What do you have to share with the people?
First off, y'all can find me on Twitter, TikTok, and Tumblr, because I still use Tumblr, at Stray Nerd Boy. And you can find me also on Blurred of Mouth Podcast, at Blurred of Mouth Pod, on Twitter, and we have a TikTok. We don't post on it, but we have one.
You should marketing, baby.
And on Blurred of Mouth Podcast, we're eventually gonna have most of it is just us reviewing Black characters in media, but we also just finished up a bunch of interviews of other Black nerds for our Blurred of the Hour specials. And soon, as I said earlier, my first time GMing for an audience is coming up, as I will be GMing a Monster of the Week miniseries. You can also currently find me right now. I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but right now at the moment, I am also appearing on the Bards and Brews Twitch channel playing Mothership for Prayers in the Static. GM'd by Kendo Makes Films, and co-hosted by Ibrahim _MA. And it's fun. They're building a whole sci-fi universe, and they're jumping from system to system to build the universe.
That is so cool. Amazing.
It's great. It's so great. Cool.
Oh my goodness. Everybody, please check out literally everything they just said. It will be linked in the description. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Spice Rack. And if you haven't, which is crazy, please listen to the D&D podcast that this accompanies, the Spice of Dice podcast.
Do it.
See, listen, he said it. He hasn't been bribed, I swear. Exam season is wrapping, well, it's not wrapping up. It's trucking on along. Eventually, we will produce more episodes. Education is important. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you next time. Keep it spicy, everybody. Bye.
See ya.
See ya.